Good morning. How is everyone? This is our Fisheries Committee meeting on February 16th, 2010. It is 10:07. Today is Thursday. Members present are Representative Eastman, Representative Tarr, myself, Chair Stutes. We're also joined by Kelly Burnett from House Records, Kelsey Goodell from the LIO, and of course, my committee aide, Reed Harris. Please note at 11 a.m. we'll begin with the Department of Fish and Game's Finance Subcommittee meeting, and that meeting will be chaired by Representative Ortiz, so stick around for that. Today we have a presentation by the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission on the permit cap fee. We have CFEC Commissioner Ben Brown, as well as Craig Farrington, who heads up the research department, and Marcus Goh, an economist from the CFEC. We will not be taking public testimony today. So, Commissioner, if you would like to come up, place yourself on the record, and begin with your presentation, and I would like to recognize Representative Chenault.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Benjamin Brown, I'm a commissioner at the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and I think just in the interest of time, I'll ask Mr. Farrington, our research leader, to join me at the table as well.
Please do.
So, we are, of course, here, Madam Chairman, at your request to go over the issue of the statutory fee ceiling of $3,000, which exists in the Limited Entry Act. And this issue arose in the last legislature as the state grapples with a fiscal crisis. And any foregone revenues are obviously of great interest to all members of the legislature as you cast about for ways to close the fiscal gap and pay for needed services for Alaskans. And so what we've attempted to do to prepare for today's hearing, Madam Chairman, is to meet with each of the members of your committee individually just to give them a little bit of the background, because it's kind of an arcane subject area. And we were successful in meeting with almost all members of the committee. Certainly we tried to offer ourselves up just so that we could make the most use of our time today. So Mr. Harris, your aide, distributed, Madam Chair, to committee members a brief memorandum from me to you, which synopsizes the history of the $3,000 statutory fee ceiling. And it was put in, as that memo indicates, back in the 24th legislature in 2005. And at that time, very briefly, there was a $300 ceiling in the statute, and that was not generating enough revenue to allow CFEC to pay its own way. We are entirely funded by program receipts, designated general funds. We don't use any undesignated general funds. And today we actually are up to about a 232% cost recovery. So we're generating a significant amount in excess of what it costs for us to operate. And of course, the trend is more revenue and less expense. So we hope to be a positive contributor to closing the fiscal gap. And this fee cap conversation is an integral part of that. So I don't want to reiterate what was in the memorandum. It's a public document. It's on basis, I believe. And so anyone who's watching at home here in Alaska or wherever they may be can go and look at that memorandum and then kind of get a little bit of a sense of where how we got to where we are today. There's a second memorandum prepared by our research staff that goes into the real granular details of what the effect would be right now if the four words that say not more than $3,000 were removed from the pertinent provision of the Limited Entry Act, and who would automatically see their fees increase when the $3,000 cap went away, and what the percentage is that they're paying. So just to be really clear, I think the most important number here is 0.4%, and that's the formula that our agency, CFEC, uses to determine fees for limited entry permits, which are transferable, salable, limited fishing privileges that can be taken by one fisherman and sold to another fisherman. 0.4% of the value of that permit and a specific fishery is what an individual pays to renew that permit each year. What we're going to be talking about mostly today is interim use permits in open access fisheries. Those are not salable individual privileges. Anyone can buy an interim use permit for an open access fishery for any calendar year. And those fees are set at the same ratio of 0.4% of the average gross earnings. And so just very briefly, that's kind of the basic ground structure on which we can maybe build our conversation up today. So if there are no questions, Madam Chair, at that point.
Please. Are there any questions from this committee?
All right, then I would turn it over to Mr. Farrington, who's prepared a very good, I think, brief slideshow that will get into some of the issues that you want to consider when you look at possibly removing the fee cap. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, thanks for allowing me to do this presentation on for making additional information on the Entry Commission's permit system.
Please identify yourself for the record and your affiliation.
My name is Craig Farrington. I work for the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission in the research section.
Thank you. Proceed.
This is not really a shameless plug for CFEC and our great staff that supports our fishermen with permits and licensing their vessels. Thanks. Well, it sort of is, but my purpose for this particular slide here of the, you know, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission website is that to show the information on that website that's referring to the what research does. And the research section, that's better. The research section is chiefly involved with the fishery economics and the economic sustainability. We also do research on vessels and research on permits, is what I'll be speaking to today. Yeah, I'm not getting the
briefities.
This is a sum of the 300 different permit types available to fishermen. CFEC permits are organized first by the species of the fish or shellfish, for instance, salmon, shrimp, clams, giant geoduck clams, weather vane scallops, and then they're further organized by the area of the state, the gear type, and by the allowable size of the fishing vessel. For instance, if you would, for example, if we're going to look at the, I need to reverse the slide there.
While you're doing that, I would take this opportunity to recognize Representative Fansler, who's joined us.
At the top left corner of this listing here, we have weather vane scallops, and darn it, my fingers. Excuse me again. And for weather vane scallops, you can see that there is the area of the state. There's state waters fisheries and there's federal waters fisheries, and the gear type is always a scallop dredge. Permits are also by the according to vessel length. We have vessel less than 80 feet and vessels greater than 80 feet. Just for clarity's sake, permits are issued to persons, not vessels. Just skippers need the permit. There are two broad categories of CFEC permits. The first being limited entry permits, which...
I have a question. Yes. Just skippers, or is it anybody that's on the boat can have the permit?
Madam Chair, just the skipper needs the permit. The crew on the boat will have a crew member license, but just the skipper needs the permit.
Okay, so
is that your question?
Yeah, I was under the impression that as long as somebody had the permit card on the boat, and that it did not necessarily have to be the skipper that had the permit.
Madam Chairman, Benjamin Brown, it's a matter of nomenclature. Whoever has the permit is the skipper to allow for the legal landing of the fish. Whether that person's up in the wheelhouse with his hand on the wheel doesn't determine whether or not he's the skipper. Being the holder of the permit on the vessel where the fish are being landed is what makes the person the skipper at the time the fishing activity is going on. So there can be more than one person, and we know in large boats there are relief skippers. So it's just a matter of nomenclature.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Proceed.
Thank you. And there are two broad categories of CFEC permits, the first being limited entry permits for the 80 fisheries which have been found necessary for limiting participation. Our example highlighted in yellow here is Bristol Bay salmon drift gillnet fisheries, and you see there's a little code there next to it. LE stands for limited entry. And if I could do a little explanation of how CFEC limits a fishery. When both a fishery resource is distressed and the economics for fishermen are inadequate for making a living, then CFEC can step in to limit the numbers of fishermen in order to improve those conditions in the fishery. Limitation is a one-time process and uses a point system to rank individuals based on their history of participation in the fishery and their economic dependence on it. Those individuals ranking high will receive a permit. Those individuals ranked low will probably not get a permit. And in that way, the number of permits granted is less than the number of fishermen previously engaged in the fishery.
Once you limit the fishery, does it remain limited indefinitely?
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you. Category two of the second category of CFEC permits are the interim use permits, which Commissioner Brown spoke to. And these are for open access fisheries. They're not limited. They're available to all comers on an annual basis. The example highlighted in yellow here is a halibut, a permit for fishing halibut with a longline vessel less than 60 feet. Most of all permits issued are limited entry fisheries, the Bristol Bay salmon fishery being one of them, and they're all conducted in state waters.
If I may, Madam Chair, a couple of representatives of the fishing industry contacted me yesterday after Mr. Harris distributed this to your list, and I wanted to make clear that although halibut's an open access fishery from the CFEC perspective, that doesn't mean you can just go out and fish for it. The federal government has regulated who can catch halibut in accordance with a treaty with the International Pacific Halibut Commission. So it's open access from the perspective of us as state regulators. We will give anyone an IUP for halibut, but if you don't have quota, and you know this, but I just want to make sure it's clear for everyone who's watching, it's not open access from the federal perspective, Madam Chair.
An IUP?
Interim use permit.
Thank you.
So fewer of all permits issued are interim use permits, which we just spoke to, for open access fisheries, including some in federal waters. Many fisheries that occur in federal waters outside of the Alaska's three-mile limit, but nevertheless, CFEC interim use permit is necessary to participate, as Commissioner Brown spoke to. And even though there are limited entry permits there are more limited entry permits issued, the total of earnings from them in 2015 was $480 million, whereas the earnings from the interim use permits was $1.34 billion in 2015.
Excuse me. Yes, Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And was that 2015 or 2016?
2015, which is the very latest data that we have complete data for. We don't have complete data for 2016 as of yet.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Proceed.
This is a pie chart of the 1,779 permits that were estimated to be issued for 2017. That's because we have to estimate that for our budget purposes. The most popular limited entry permit that we see here is the Bristol Bay Salmon Drift Permit. That's the piece of the pie wedge that's in blue, or light blue, sky blue. It represents about 10% of all the permits that we will issue in 2017. The most popular interim use permit, is the statewide halibut longline vessel less than 60 feet. That is the wedge of the pie that's in black here. That's about 10% of the permits that will be issued for 2017. And the 15 permit types that are currently capped by the fee ceiling are represented by the thin sliver that's in red. Fees for permits are always 0.4% of the market value of limited entry permits. I'm just reiterating that. Or they are 0.4% of the average earnings made with a permit, with an interim use permit. Except, and there's an exception for that, except for the 15 permit types that are capped at $3,000, and they can be as low as 1%, 0.1% of the value of the permit. This slide speaks to describing the 15 different permit types that are capped by the fee ceiling of $3,000, and I won't belabor describing each. But there are basically five different groupings here. There's permits for king crab. There's permits for longline gear for miscellaneous saltwater finfish. There's permits miscellaneous saltwater finfish by trawl gear type. And there are permits for tanner crab. And there's one permit at the bottom for a weather vane scallop. In federal waters for vessels greater than 80 feet. So I want to also to reiterate again that permits are for persons and not for vessels, and there are included here some specialty permits for the community development quota groups, which receive 10% of the Bering Sea groundfish and crab quota. And we're five of the seven different CDQ groups, as that's the acronym for it, for the community development quota. Five of the seven groups are represented here. The commonality for all these 15 permit types is that they're all high value permits because the fisheries are high value. King crab was approximately $10 a pound in 2015. Tanner crab was a little over $2 a pound, and the volume of the catch was very large. The sheer volume of miscellaneous saltwater finfish, which includes whitefish in billions of pounds of pollock and other whitefish species, means that those permits are high value as well, and the weather vane scallops in 2015 were approaching $8 a pound. This chart is for the ex-vessel earnings for all permits in 2015. Approximately $1.82 billion is represented here.
Excuse me, could you define ex-vessel earnings, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. It's what is received dockside by fishermen. So when they pull up the dock and sell their fish, that is ex-vessel value at that point. So
Thank
it doesn't
you.
Include wholesale value.
Proceed.
Thank you. 2015 earnings made with the Bristol Bay drift gillnet permit that we had seen earlier. The sky blue pie wedge there was approximately $105 million in 2015. 2015 earnings made with the halibut permit that we had seen earlier, which is the wedge, the black wedge, was $88 million. And in 2017, so I'm jumping here to jumping ahead to 2017, but CFEC will issue approximately 485 of the permits that will be cut by the fee ceiling. Those permits were used to make $1.03 billion in 2015, and that is the pie wedge that's in red here. So it's about 56% of all earnings were earned by those permits that had a fee cap of $3,000. And as I intimated earlier, some of those, as far as percentage, were as low as 0.1% of the earnings for one of those permits. This slide is on the complexion of CFEC permits in general, and it's mostly out of the 17,729 permits for 2017, most of those will be for Alaskan residents, approximately 76%. Permits capped by the fee ceiling would be mostly non-residents, 83% non-residents, 17% resident. And with the current fee ceiling, there is an estimated $2.2 million, which could have been collected for 2017, which is we're labeling foregone revenue. And if we're just referring to percentages for the foregone revenue, it would be coming from 90% non-residents, 10% Alaska residents. And that concludes my presentation.
So I have several questions that might be clarifying for this committee. This is a very, very difficult formula and whole situation to understand, and the issue is, of course, removing the CFEC cap, the $3,000 cap. I notice that on not any of your slides was there anything listed for vessels under 60 feet. Can you explain that to this committee, please?
Well, Madam Chairman, I'll try. Benjamin Brown from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Limited entry permits and interim use permits are issued to individual skippers. Those skippers don't necessarily get to keep all of the revenue, the value, the ex-vessel value. And so individuals may purchase an interim use permit to use on a vessel that individual owns. They may also use that same permit to fish on a vessel owned by somebody else. And they only have to have one permit to fish in a given fishery, the miscellaneous statewide finfish fishery. So if someone owns a vessel that's 58 feet long, he or she might buy a permit for that vessel and only fish on that vessel. That same individual might buy an interim use permit for the 125 foot and up category, and that would enable that individual to fish on his or her own vessel, but also to go be what is often known as a relief skipper on a much larger boat owned by a community quota entity out in western Alaska or owned by one of the large seafood processing corporations in Seattle. And so the anomaly, I suppose, comes when we're looking at landings. We know the name of the permit holder, the IUP holder, and we know which vessels he or she fished on and what the X vessel of landings on each vessel was. We don't know if that individual actually had to pay his or her own IUP fee, and we also don't know how much of the revenues from the actual landing of the fish that individual gets to keep. And so when you ask about some of these vessels under 60 feet, because individuals who might be landing some of their fish on that vessel are in the possession of a permit for 125 feet and up, those earnings are going to be averaged with the higher, with the longer vessel class. And they're not going to be averaged with the under 60-foot class. And that leads to a distortion, if you will, in the actual allocation of revenues to individuals that ultimately leads to what that, those individuals pay for IUP renewal fees or for purchase fees. So I don't know if I'm getting exactly your question. I know that the, I think there's an existing concern that if the $3,000 fee cap were to be removed right now, it would have the result of making fishermen who purchase these IUPs but don't get to keep all the revenues have to pay a significantly larger IUP interim use permit fee, even though they're not getting to keep the money that's being earned with that interim use permit. And so if strictly rational economic behavior were to result from lifting the fee cap, an individual would only buy an IUP for the length of vessel that that individual owned and was planning to fish on and wouldn't have the option of being a free agent and being a relief skipper in a much larger boat. An individual would have to calculate the cost-benefit analysis of paying for, if it was a $13,000 fee, if the cap went away for the M7HB or the M7IB, that individual would run the risk of not making enough money in a given year to pay for that fee if that individual didn't know that the fishing opportunities on a larger vessel were going to exist. So I hope that answers your question.
So along those lines, if you had different categories, right now it's 125 feet and up. So a boat that is 125 feet is paying the same $3,000 fee that a 350-foot boat is paying, and there's no disincentive for a 58-foot boat that can carry, the super 58-footers can carry in excess capacity in some instances of that 125-foot boat, there's no disincentive for them as a 58-footer not to buy the 125-foot license. Am I getting this correct?
Absolutely, Madam Chairman. If we wanted to analogize to firepower, you know, you could either have a handgun, a 22, a shotgun, or a cannon. And right now, someone who only needs a handgun can pay the same amount and get a cannon because of the $3,000 fee cap. And then that individual can go out and go to the range with his or her handgun when they want, when he or she wants, but also has the option to go and fire that cannon off and catch a whole bunch more fish. But again, we don't know who's keeping the revenues from all those fish that are caught on that 125-foot, that 300-foot boat. And frankly, this was something we were able to discuss meeting individually, with committee members, CFEC would like to gather more data in the interim use permit application process, because we will be in a much better position to evaluate whether the vessel length categorizations for interim use permit fees are fair and reasonable before such time as the cap might go away. So there wouldn't be a shock to the system and the fleet when the cap went away. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there is a disincentive. The economic penalty for buying the larger firepower interim use permit doesn't exist because of the cap.
So currently, if we just took the cap off, people that are buying up on their licenses now could conceivably decrease their expense by buying the appropriate license under the current categorization, and the 350-footers going to get nailed.
Madam Chairman, but it wouldn't be a direct, it wouldn't happen immediately because we've got a 3-year process of averaging the gross earnings. So if the cap went away right now and next year, because we strongly recommend this be done on a calendar year basis because that's when our limited entry permits and interim use permits are renewed on. So in the last legislature, there was a bill that had the fiscal year is the start date, and that would have been really difficult for everyone at our agency to deal with. But let's say the fee cap went away so that on the 1st of January 2018, it was no longer holding people harmless and there was no longer that artificiality in the market. Fishermen would have to decide, well, maybe I don't want to pay $13,775 for a 125-foot and up. And then that same fisherman, though, would presumably buy one for the under 60-foot category, go out, catch a bunch of fish. Those earnings would no longer be averaged in the 125-foot and up category. They would go into a new average with 60-foot and under, and over 3 years, the market would correct itself. But in those first couple of years, I imagine you and we would hear from a lot of fishermen who weren't very happy with the sudden shock of the removal of the cap. But over time, it would right itself. We would have every reason to believe that would be how it would work.
So I have one more question, and then I'll pass the gavel here, so to speak. In the anticipation that the cap is going to come off, would it be fair and reasonable to have minimal increments of an increase of what the cap is currently for, say, a three-year period, and then at the end of that three-year period have a defined formula or categorization of these vessels that would, in fact, be fair and equitable?
Madam Chairman, that of course is a policy call for the wisdom of the legislature, but I can direct you back to what was done in 2005, and at that time when the $300 cap was replaced with a $3,000 cap, it was phased in over a couple of years, so it didn't go up to $3,000 in 1 year. So I think, like anything, change is difficult, and so when you give people an opportunity to know that it's going to be phased in, it's going to be received better. The downside is there's a little more foregone revenue during that phase-in period. So it's a compromise between not shocking people by taking away something that they're accustomed to, which is a fee cap, but also making sure that there is parity, that at the end of the day, everyone's paying 0.4% of either their limited entry permit value or the gross earnings average in their open access fishery. But yes, I think it would probably be wise to consider phasing it in. If you look back at Senate Bill 93 and the 24th legislature, that's exactly what was done at that time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you stole my question. through the chair, one thing that I worry about a little bit is the idea of a barrier of entry to new fishers. And can you speak on, and perhaps you already did, and when I wasn't here, and my apologies for that, but can you speak to the effect of the constitutionality of perhaps having maybe a lower fee or a lower percentage for a first-time licensee, and then having a renewal fee that's at the 0.4%, maybe to provide incentive for new skippers and things like that. So,
Madam Chairman, Representative Fansler, the Equal Protection Clause of the Alaska Constitution is a very strong provision of our state constitution, and it's been very strictly upheld by the Alaska Supreme Court. So someone could certainly bring a challenge. We don't have any provision currently in the Limited Entry Act to incentivize new participants in that way. What we do have is a system for limited entry permits that sets those renewal fees at a much more approachable level than what we're looking at in these open access fisheries, where the fee would skyrocket, if you will, to $13,000. We don't try to manipulate the prices of permits that we have issued or that we oversee the transfer of on a temporary or an emergency basis. We make sure that the person who's the proposed transferee is ready, able, and willing to fish, and we demand that the transferor and the transferee disclose all the terms of a proposed transfer. But so that's the strict black letter of the Limited Entry Act. We do certainly work with legislators and community leaders and entities like the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, who are committed to using means outside the Limited Entry Act to enhance the ability of would-be fishermen to get into the fleet. And I would note Representative Christ Tompkins is very keenly interested in this, and he's come up with some ideas that are very ambitious that would that all try to address the same goal. We have the graying of the fleet as a documented fact in Alaska. We have rural Alaskans who are leaving their rural communities and migrating to cities or, God forbid, leaving Alaska altogether. And we want to stop that. That's something I think I can speak for Chairman Twomley and all of us at the Commission. We definitely want to see more Alaskans entering fishing as a lifelong activity and making successful, productive careers out of it so they can support their families and their communities. But I would probably say, this is a long-winded answer to your question, Madam Chairman, Representative Fansler, I wouldn't want to put an age discriminatory provision in the Limited Entry Act because I think there are other ways to try to meet the same need. And ultimately, someone would challenge it, and they would probably have a good chance of challenging it under equal protection.
Thank you. That answered my question, and it hit on the key points that I also wanted to emphasize. So thanks.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, just so I understand it, Ben, we didn't get an opportunity to have a meeting, so maybe I would have asked these questions in. Madam Chairman, I'm looking on page 6 of the program, and we're talking about there's 485 of these permits that are capped at the $3,000. Just a quick pencil, that's about $1.455 million in fees associated with those permits. But you're estimating right now that apparently in 2015, there's a $1.03 billion were made on those particular permits. I think it's ballpark, and I'll just round numbers, that's 1%. Well, it's probably less than 1% of the total take. And I'm curious as to what you think the real number will be in regards to, I guess, the vessel take versus the income into the state for the use of the resource.
Madam Chairman, Representative Chenault, because those are gross earnings, mm-hmm. we don't get to look inside the black box of how those earnings are distributed, whether it's a payment to the skipper who bought the permit that helped land the fish, whether it's payment to the crew on the vessel, whether it's purchase of groceries and fuel and other supplies necessary for that vessel to go out. We don't know. I mean, we can see where the vessel's home ported, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's where it's fueled up and stocked up. So this goes back to what I said, Madam Chairman, Representative Schultz, earlier about wanting to gather more data about these open access fisheries and these when an interim use permit is applied for. We have the statutory authority, and this would be confidential, of course, to ask the applicant some more specific questions about the nature of the business enterprise they're involved in, so we can have a better picture to answer the kind of question you just asked. How much of this money is being paid in wages to Alaskans? How much of it's being spent on supplies at Alaskan ports? How much of it is going elsewhere? And there's nothing wrong with it going elsewhere, but we just simply don't know right now. And it's an intrusive question, but if we don't ask it, we're never going to get the answer. So I could ask Mr. Farrington, as an economist and as our lead research person, to speculate what the take for the state's going to be, but I think it is an exercise of speculation because we're not asking those tough questions right now. So I don't know, Mr. Farrington.
And Madam Chairman, if I may, Ben thinks, we talk about other resources and other resource development. I'm not a commercial fisherman. I take that back. I fished for halibut for a month with a guy back when I was about 14, 15. I got out of that business because I could see I couldn't make any money in it. Not where we were particularly efficient. But anyway, I just look, and not being familiar enough with it, and I need to have some more conversations with you, there's a lot of money made in the commercial fishing industry in the state of Alaska. And I don't know what the total net back to the state is. If we treated the commercial fishing industry like we treat the oil industry, no commercial fishermen would probably work because they couldn't afford it. I don't want to damage any fishery across the state, but I also think that we need to look at other sources of revenue, and this may not be a source of revenue, but there certainly is a large industry there that we need to make sure that we do ask the questions, that we do find out the information to determine whether or not that we are receiving a share or a fair share, as some people like to call it, of our resource.
Representative Chenault, in response to that, we do have some facts and figures in my office on the different revenues that are paid to this state by fisheries that we can provide to this committee that have been provided to us by UFA. So we will provide that to this committee.
Thank you, ma'am.
Commissioner.
And Madam Chairman, to respond to Representative Chenault's question, it's a very good point. In the last legislature, you'll recall when this fee cap issue came up, it was alongside proposed increases in two taxes on the fishing industry and the ancillary effect of the increase in the motor fuel tax on all the vessels that require motor fuel, which is almost all of them. So certainly we can speak to CFEC's fees, but that is kind of in a vacuum. You need to look at, as Representative Chenault and you have both just indicated, the totality of contributions being made by the fishing industry, I think, before you decide the wisdom of removing this fee cap or not, because it's part of a bigger picture. But you'll have to get Mr. Alper from the Department of Revenue to talk about those tax revenues, because that's outside of our area of expertise.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Eastman.
Actually, I think I'll defer to my colleague here on the opposite side of the table.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Eastman. Two things that came up in the Q&A that I wanted to ask follow-up questions about. The first is, you previously mentioned of this big splotch of red on slide 6 that Representative Chenault was asking about. You mentioned you don't know where the revenues really go or sort of how all that money flows, but you do know where those boats are homeported from. And can you speak to where those boats are homeported from, all the boats that constitute the majority of ex-vessel revenue in Alaska?
Madam Chairman, Representative Christ-Tompkins, we sort of confused the issue by doing that in the last legislature because these are not vessel-based permits. That stated, when fish are landed, we know the interim use permit or the limited entry permit they're landed on and the name of the vessel, and then we can look and see where is that vessel homeported. So we could get you that information, but that's not really going to answer the question about where the money's going. That's kind of a way station on the way to that ultimate information destination of where the money's actually going. So certainly we could pull that for you, and I think we did that last year, but the undesirable side effect was people started to think that these were vessel-based fishing privileges, and they're not vessel-based fishing privileges. They're individual-based fishing privileges. And we're not going to tell you the name of every individual IUP holder and how much money he or she made on each of the vessels. But we could certainly do that. And when you look at the final slide, this is, I'm glad you mentioned this, which talks about the resident or non-resident status of those who would be affected by removing the fee cap. Well, if you look at the 485 permits estimated for 2017, 17% of them are individuals who list an Alaskan address, and the other 83% don't. But just because an individual doesn't list an Alaskan address doesn't mean he or she's not working for a community quota. You know, so that a lot of the money that Seattle-based person is bringing in may well be ending up in Western Alaska through a CQE, through the CDQ program, the Community Development Quota Program. So we could pull that information for you, but I don't know that it's going to provide what you need to continue analyzing the wisdom of removing the fee cap or not. It's interesting, but more interesting would be who's paying what and who's keeping the ultimate revenues. And I don't know how far we want to go in getting all those answers, but we definitely want to move in the direction of asking more questions than we're asking right now.
Follow up?
No, thank you very much.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And I'm just wondering, because you said that these permits are done on an annual basis on the calendar year, so, you know, we're just going to be initiating the 2017 permits. Are you planning to ask these additional questions when you do renewals for this calendar year? And are you allowed with your current statutory language to do that? Or do we need to make a change to empower you to be able to get this information that we need to make the decision?
Madam Chairman, Representative Tarr, It's my belief and my fellow Commissioner Bruce Trombley's belief that we already have the statutory authority to do this. If our attorneys from the Department of Law are watching this hearing, they're probably wondering why we actually haven't formally asked that question of them yet, and we're planning to. So, but I would be surprised if we did not already have the statutory authority, and if we did need to get it, we would certainly welcome legislative assistance in so doing. We've already issued interim use permits for 2017, so we can't really start the data gathering process now. Mm-hmm. What we'd want to do is put it into the forms for 2018 going forward, and then you would know that we were engaged in that data gathering process. And if, again, there's no bill right now to remove the fee cap, but if one were introduced, we would certainly recommend that it have a delayed effective date until the results of that data gathering process are back before us.
Follow up, Madam Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And can you give us just a little better understanding of the timeline? So you've already done the 2017. So if we were looking to get this kind of information for the 2018 permits, you know, would you be collecting that basically the fall of 2017 so that by the end of the calendar year you'd have a better understanding and could provide information to the legislature?
Madam Chairman, Representative Tarr, we haven't sold every IUP that we're going to sell for 2017. Some people are still going to come in and request them and pay for them. That's why I say we're midway through that process. But we can certainly be proactive, and on the application form for 2018, I don't believe anyone's bought a 2018 interim use permit yet. So that's the bright line where we know we'll be able to put the question on the form and say, please tell us these things, and we'll be we're not going to ask for too much information. We're going to ask for what we think is best for us to use going forward. And so that would practically mean that if we wanted to change anything about the categorizations of these interim use permit fees based on vessel length, it would be 2019 before we were really in a position to do that. Going back to the concept of a phase-in removal of fee cap, that would seem to me to kind of work nicely together, that if it were to go up something beyond just as high as it would go with the formula working without a cap, maybe next year at the earliest, that would put people on notice that the following year there would be a data-driven realignment if necessary, and then the fee cap would go away and everyone would just have to pay the 0.4% across the board.
Thank you. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, the graying of the fleet is, you know, a demographic issue, which sort of speaks to the need for a structural response. And so I'm wondering, especially with the barriers to entry in the form of a permit being fairly substantial, does the Commission have any recommendations on how we can address the graying and change that trend? And can the Commission speak to its thoughts on going away from an upfront fee-based system and maybe pushing some of those costs more onto the production side?
Madam Chairman, Representative Eastman, I think solving the graying of the fleet problem, and frankly, I can tell you there's a graying process going on at CFEC. I mean, I'm getting grayer all the time myself. So, tempus fugit, you know, the Roman maxim applies to all of us. So I think the only thing we can do is look to young Alaskans and say, look, this is a really great industry. What can we do to bring people on board? I think the supply side, in terms of supplying would-be fishermen, is the best place to go in terms of helping solve the problem. When you mentioned deferring the cost of entering, there are already programs, I mentioned BBEDC, in place to help do that. The Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund is a state-sponsored loan program operated by our friends at the Division of Economic Development and the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And they do a tremendous job of really trying to meet people where the need is. You know, people who've been turned down by commercial lenders are welcome to go to them and say, look, I really want to buy a permit, or I want to buy a boat, or I want a combination of those things, or some new gear. And they will work with them. And of course, this is not something everyone may know, there are only two loan programs, the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund and the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, that are statutorily allowed to use one of our limited entry permits as collateral. So that's one great way to do it. But the other reason your question is timely is I see Jerry McCune, the president of the United Fishermen of Alaska Board here, and we've been in a dialogue with him and some folks from the administration about ways to get the information out there, get the word out there to young Alaskans before they leave high school, maybe as they're entering high school and they're thinking, what am I going to do after this 4 years is over, to plant the seed in their minds that fishing is a really great career opportunity. And I don't know that we're doing as much as we can right now to spread the word in that regard. So I don't know what form that's going to take, but I know UFA wants to, they want to have young fishermen joining their ranks as members of the organizations that comprise the United Fishermen of Alaska. We want to have young fishermen who are willing to buy permits from our existing permit holders and to go out there and keep fishing so the value of the permits remain high, so that the share of contribution to the Alaska economy is robust and high. And so when you look at a rural Alaska, the diversification and all the benefits that come with it of those economies are benefiting from fishing in the way that they should. So again, this kind of goes back, Madam Chairman, to what I said to Representative Panther's question. I wouldn't want to put something in the Limited Entry Act that tried to say if you're a first-time entrant, you don't have to pay all of the cost of buying a permit from the person you're buying it from, because that's not really fair to be impose that condition on the transferor. But we want to do whatever we can outside the system that exists to encourage financing mechanisms, public awareness campaigns, and just anything else we can do to kind of ease the way into a fishing career. And I know that there are young men and women in your district, and they're in every single House district and Senate district across the state, that ought to be pursuing fishing careers, and we just need to meet them over halfway and get them out on the water.
Thank you. Are there further questions from this committee? Seeing none, I want to thank you for the presentation. It's been very informative. We appreciate it. And seeing no further business, fisheries will be adjourned at 10:58.